Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and my co-host today is Dave Allen, and we're going to bring you our opinions and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Wednesday, January 22nd, 2020. Good afternoon, Dave. I want to hear it. It's been too many weeks.
Hey, I'm not going to let you down. Happy hump day, Melody. Hey. Great to be back with you.
Oh, it's great to be here, and I missed the programs, and I missed you, and I also missed Wendy Wilson. She'll be joining us today, but first, let's go ahead and get to the market prices today. Gold had a tough day today, but in the last, hour of trade, it tried to claw its way back to a whole dollar to the upside, and we'll take it. Closing in on $1,560 in the New York spot price aftermarket. Silver was up 6 cents today at $17.90. Platinum was up 14 at $1,017. And palladium continues to rule the roost here, up 82 bucks today at $2,568. And that was a little over 3.5%. USDX today is trading slightly weaker, down 0.07 at 97.54, along with crude oil down 1.69. Big drop there, 1.69 at 56.69. I actually thought we'd see a stronger mark there as I was reading. I think it was out of, I'm not quite sure, the Washington Times, so I don't know how current this is, but United States troops were blocking Russian forces from capturing the Syrian oil field. So I thought maybe we'd see a little bit higher oil prices there, but to my surprise, pretty big weakness there. Of course, no one's paying any attention to the news anyway, so maybe it'll have a delayed reaction come tomorrow. The paper markets today, let me bring those up. We're looking at stock market was up most of the day, and it was up higher, but it still managed to stay up 18 points, 29,214. The NASDAQ was up 13 points at 9,383, and the S&P was basically unchanged at 3,321. 10-year yield, 1.77%. Euro is still holding at 1.11. There's certainly no manipulation there in the euro. 1.11 for the euro. Hong Kong was up 1.25% overnight. And, that was pretty much, I think, all eyes were focused a little bit today on Davos, as President Trump early this morning here in the States. Afternoon over there had a press conference. A lot of questions were asked. A lot of questions were answered. We'll probably touch on that a little bit later on in the program. But I'd like to go to Wendy Wilson right now from Apothecary Herbs. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Good afternoon, Melanie. And hello, Dave.
Hey there.
I owe you a big apology last week. Guess what, Melanie? Guess what happened?
What happened?
I got the flu.
No.
Oh, I did. Oh, I did. I did. I mean, we had this big office move right after, the first of the year, and I just, burning the candle at both ends kind of thing. And I just, let the immune system get a little weak there, and bam, I get the flu. And I'm laying in bed after 5 p.m., and I go, what day is this? Oh, it's Wednesday. And I go, oh, no. I was supposed to do a show with Dave. Anyway, I do apologize. It was just...
None necessary whatsoever. We're glad you're feeling better.
Yeah, well, I mean, I got back in the office on Friday. I could have gone Thursday, but I wanted to take another day. But it's a real nice pro-virus out there that's circulating, so I hope people, power up their immune systems, don't do what I do, and, work too much and not get enough rest.
All right, I'm quitting the program now. I'm going to go rest.
Good night.
You know what? I just want to say this. I hear comments. I talk to people all over this country, and it was like the first 2 weeks of January.
Right.
From the feedbacks, from the end of December, first 2 weeks of it's been hit everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. It's a nasty little virus. It's really a combination between a flu bug and a sinus infection. Mm-hmm. And I want to say, you know, you had to get the body aches when you get the flu. Well, you get joint aches that your joints get stiff and you can't even get in and out of a tub. So, I mean, it's an interesting little combination of viruses. I think were man-made, to be honest. But anyway,
and today someone also said that the flu shot has absolutely nothing, no
protection, yeah,
whatsoever.
Well, people get the flu vaccine and they're shedding off the virus for 2 weeks. You could be standing in line at the grocery store and pick it up. I mean, it's just keep the immune system strong. Try not to get overworked. When you get tired and fatigued, that's when, you know, you're most vulnerable, and that's what I did. So don't do what I did. Anyway, we're going to be talking about drugs that cause blood clots, and you'd be surprised. Anyone, you want to take a... Huh? Well, yeah. Well, just, you know, throw them all in the good basket there. But if you had to take a guess on what drug causes blood clots, what would you say, Melanie?
Oh, heavens. Aspirin.
She is so on. That's right. Yep. Your non-steroidal anti-inflammatories and aspirin. Exactly.
Wait a second. Haven't we been told for 20 years that we take them to prevent blood clots?
You're absolutely correct, Dave. Actually, for decades, we have heard about how aspirin therapies help prevent heart attack, stroke. In fact, that's not the truth. So the scientific research has been kind of flawed, and for decades, your physicians have been postgraduate schooled and trained in flawed journal reports. So I want you to remember when doctors recommended people eat that fake butter called margarine? Later, it was discovered that margarine did not prevent heart disease, did not lower cholesterol, but actually gave you heavy doses of trans fats and gave you heart disease and other chronic health conditions. Remember that?
That and other products.
All right, so here is the reversal, because in December 2017, Washington University School of Medicine did a report that most patients that suffer from abnormal blood clots aren't able to take the prescribed medicine sold to prevent the blood clots. So apparently the blood clots that offer this higher risk are the deep vein thrombosis type of clots in your limbs. So the research at Washington University said that the clot-busting drugs are at a risk for them to take. So the drugs for blood clots expose the patient to having a dangerous bleed, post-complications, which is called post-thrombotic syndrome, where 300 to 600,000 people get each year in the United States. And it's leg pain, swelling, and difficulty walking. Now, other treatments medicine is exploring to remove these clots for the deep vein thrombosis patients is just as risky. Here's an example. This is a quote from a medical professor of radiology and surgery at Washington University. His name's Dr. Suresh Vandatham. And he says, we are dealing with a very sharp, double-edged sword here. None of us were surprised to find that the treatment for thrombosis removal with adjunctive catheters is riskier than the blood-thinning drugs, end of quote. So, you know, and the mystery of why we're getting abnormal blood clots is really not all that mysterious. Most of the time, if you do get clots and you're not taking any over-the-counter drugs, it's usually diet. Our diet is directly responsible for how our blood is clotting. So there are some drugs that can create blood clot issues for patients that didn't have them to begin with. So prescriptions like over-the-counter painkillers even, these drugs have a blood clotting risk potential. So the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories like your aspirin, Aleve, Advil, Motrin, Naproxen, Ibuprofen, Voltran, all can give you a blood clot condition. So if you're using them, you know, pretty steadily, that you should, you know, listen up, because science is not comfortable stating that these drugs give you the problem. They'll often say there's an association between clots and the drugs, but they won't outright come and say, yeah, your aspirin and your pain relievers are going to give you blood clots. So the research did get published, though, in the Journal of Rheumatology, September 2017, where it stated you have an 80% higher risk of developing deep vein blood clots when you take these drugs. Check that out, right? So when what is even more concerning is the research team in the article stated physicians need to know this as if they were unaware. Your doctors are unaware of this. So here's a couple of quotes. Stephen Carson, MD, chief of rheumatology immunology at Winthrop, says, "It is not entirely surprising that the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories are again implicated in causing clot-related illnesses. Do you recall the drug Vioxx, a powerful non-steroidal anti-inflammatory that was withdrawn from the market in 2004 due to the drug causing deadly heart attacks and strokes?" So he's not surprised at all. So they say that this is Dr. Morton Schmidt, clinical epidemiologist at University Hospital of Aarhus. He says patients who take the non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs have a greater risk, double the risk, he says, of developing blood clots in their legs or lungs. Also, previous studies showed us that these medications do increase the risk of cardiac fibrillations and also thrombosis. So, you know, they you could be checking out if you have a weak heart, is what he's saying.
How can you tell you have a blood clot?
Well, and then the deep vein thrombosis usually causes pain and swelling in the leg. You'll know. Sometimes you can get a blood clot. I've heard of, you know, people that have on these long overseas flights and they don't get up and walk the aisle enough, especially people over age of 50, 55, and they'll get to their airport destination, they actually get picked up, taken to their destination, and they can just keel over with a clot in the lung. Wow. Clot, yeah. Because, you know, you're sitting, you're too sedentary. So, also, we need to mention this. This is in March 2013 at the University of Michigan Health Systems. They researched drugs for blood clots, and they stated that some clot prevention therapies, called clot-busting medicines, or TPAs, can create a slow brain bleed and doesn't cause symptoms. Okay. The study did not include patients that were taking next-generation blood thinners like the Pradaxa or Xarelto, but it's a brain that causes a brain bleed, and this is the attitude from some doctors. Dr. William Muir, professor of emergency medicine, he says, "In light of the long-term benefit patients may receive from antiplatelet therapy, the small risk of an intracranial hemorrhage should not be seen as a game changer." I don't know. I kind of like my brain not bleeding there, Doc.
A little bit.
Yeah. So, kind of makes you wonder, though. You probably, Dave, heard about the former NBA commissioner David Stern, 77 years old. He just died from a brain hemorrhage. He just died from a brain hemorrhage. Okay? So you have to wonder, was he on these types of medicines that created it? Here's a Dr. Wells, Philip Wells of Ottawa Hospital. He says, "We know from previous studies that about 40% of the venous thrombosis patients are on long-term blood thinners." So they're on supposedly something that won't create clots, but long-term it will, is the problem. The National Center for Health Statistics shows that if you have blood clots or thrombosis, it's severe enough to rank third behind cancer. Yep. So you don't want blood clots to obstruct vessels, obviously, that are delivering blood supply to the body. And you also don't want to die from a drug-induced brain hemorrhage either. So a lot of inactivity will increase your chances of getting thrombosis, so keep that in mind. Sedentary jobs, long-distance travel, especially in the air overseas, can put you at that higher risk of developing a blood clot in the limb. And if you travel frequently, real important to get up. You know, if you're on a road, stop the car, get out, walk around. If you're on a plane, walk the aisle. But poor diet is a direct influence on how our blood clots. Okay, so it's called fibrinogen levels. And the U.S. National Library of Medicine Institute of Health stated fibrinogen levels are regulated by an interesting and complex interplay between environment and your genes. And we all know that our diet influences our genes. You know, a healthy diet, you change your genetic code in 6 days. So fibrinogen is this protein that's in your blood. It regulates the clotting effect. It is directly influenced by what you're eating, and it also changes your genetic code within just 6 days, your food does. Now, there's a journal article on this in the Journal of Arteriosclerosis, Thrombosis, and Vascular Biology. It appeared in 2006, and researchers wanted to compare the different diets, such as the Western diet and the Asian diet, and they found that the Western diet that we take, you know, we eat, we take in more iron, and we take in more sugar, and we take in more caffeine than those in the Asian part of the world. So they found these are big influences on the fibrinogen level in the blood, making it more fibrinic or sticky, where your blood will stick together and clot. So the Asian diet had lower levels of fibrinogen because they didn't have those high groups of iron, caffeine, and sugar. They said our lifestyle choices affect the fibrinogen level in the blood by at least 60%. So your food choices influence it at least that much. Wow. So alcohol consumption, smoking, obesity, that has a 20% influence on your fibrinogen protein level. Also, lack of regular exercise was on the list, as well as if you have a condition with inflammation. It seems to be a marker that you may have a fibrinogen imbalance. And they also say omega-3 fatty acids, not eating enough of those in the diet, and antioxidants, not getting enough of those either. Now, here's something that I found. I dug this up. This is from a journal that appeared in 1946, the Journal of Nutrition, regarding diet that influences blood plasma and fibrinogen levels. And this is what it said. It said, your synthetic diets, this is so funny that they call it that, synthetic diets, which are product of high, will produce high fibrinogen levels. And what they mean by high synthetic diets is not enough whole grains in the diet. It's a lot of processed food. They call that the synthetic diet. Fasting. If you fast, it reduces the elevated fibrinogen levels to adequate levels. So fasting used to be a regular practice, especially religious people would do it, you know, and we don't do enough of that. Beef liver induced really high fibrinogen levels. Vitamin E and brewer's yeast did not influence fibrinogen levels at all. And they said their conclusion is that diet, the content of our diet with high meats, animal meats, causes the rise in the fibrinogen content, and not enough fruits and vegetables to help influence a normal fibrinogen level. So that's how much power we all have on not getting blood clots, not getting thrombosis, not getting inflammation, is through diet. That's our original medicine, according to Hippocrates, and he got it right.
You know, it really is simple to stay healthy. But yet, it's one of the hardest things to do in the world that we live in today.
Well, here's a quote from Wendell Berry. It says, "People are fed by the food industry, which pays no attention to health, and are treated by the health industry that pays no attention to food." So, you know, we're kind of having to do it ourselves, basically. Yep. So, keep a healthy lifestyle. Mediterranean diet probably a safe bet. Herbs are here to bridge the gap if you need them.
Your phone number, real quick, Wendy.
866-229-3663, thepowerherbs.com. See you guys next time.
Alrighty, thanks,
bye.
Wendy. We'll be right back right
Since
after.
The beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSCTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. And remember to sign up for our weekly newsletter. And, of course, you can listen to these programs live or listen to the archives whenever you have the desire to listen to Financial Survival. So we're there for you. Give us a call. Any questions about your gold and silver portfolios? If you'd like to, for us to take a look at what you have, make suggestions, we will do that for you too. There's no cost to you for us doing that. We can give you some ideas, perhaps rearrange your portfolio a little bit and put you on a plan on how you can accumulate or what you should be accumulating just to make your portfolio work for you just a little bit better, and to be diversified and to have a balance. There's so much going on, Dave, and it's really interesting because, you know, we're told, and even President Trump said, that the U.S. economic growth would have been closer to 4% if it wasn't for the lingering effect of the Federal Reserve rate hikes. That was a big blip that should not have taken place, President Trump said. It should not have happened. But it was one of those things. But we had Boeing. We had the big strike with General Motors. And we had things happen that are very unusual to happen. This is what he's talking in a TV interview from the World Economic Forum that I had mentioned earlier in the program, that we'd probably talk a little bit higher, and also suggested that the stock market would be even higher than where we are today. So I'm not so sure we would see 4%. I don't think we'll ever see 4%, not in any near future. But don't know if the interest rise, and I mean, it certainly did put a brake on things, but so did a lot of other things, Dave.
Well, indeed. I mean, he said in respect to the stock market, he could see 5,000 to 10,000 points more in the Dow, and just called the rate hikes a big mistake. Now, many economists say the trade war with China cost GDP as much as 0.5% in lower growth after the, you know, over the past year plus. We know the president has repeatedly taken on the Fed and its chair, Jerome Powell, for raising rates too quickly and too often, in his view. Trump nominated Powell to the role in November 2017, and the Fed raised rates 4 times the next year. Now, Trump's remarks echoed those of his top economic advisor, Larry Kudlow, Melody's friend.
BFF.
Indeed. When he predicted 3% growth in GDP in 2020, Kudlow said, this is a long cycle, and what you've got here in the Trump years is essentially a mini up cycle. You've gone from 1.5% to 2% growth. We had it going at almost 4%, and then the Fed tightened.
But that's what you do when the economies are strong. That's just what you, I mean, I'm not a fan of the Fed by any means. they shouldn't even be in existence, as far as my opinion goes. But, I mean, you know, if the economy is as strong as you do, that's what you do. You raise rates. We had the manufacturing trade data that was released this month. You know, we did end on a strong note. We've seen some weakening in manufacturing, though. But the economy is expected to grow more than 2% in the fourth quarter. So we're still, it would still represent a slowdown from the 2.9 increase in 2018. But, you know, there are some that still say that this 2% growth, Dave, would still suggest that the decade-old expansion is set to continue, especially in this election year. And you know what happens in election years. They do everything possible that they can so they do get reelected. I don't care who's in there. You want to have a strong economy and good numbers going into an election year. But so from a policy standpoint, Trump stood firm on his use of tariffs in trade negotiations, particularly as his administration looks to follow its so-called Phase 1 trade deal with China. So that's what was said a little bit at the Davos meeting, and it coincides with the second anniversary of Donald Trump's first deployment of tariffs. And one of the main intended beneficiaries of his protection back on January 22nd, 2018, was, of course, the American solar panel industry. Now, the move, based on a so-called 201 case requiring proof of serious harm from unfair global competition, put tariffs on $8.5 billion in solar modules and cells starting at 30% in 1 year. But then it was scaled, it was supposed to be scaling down to 15% by the fourth year. And of course, you had the Chinese imports were the big threat to domestic imports. And one of the U.S. trade rep's goals was talks with Beijing that yielded fair and sustainable trade throughout the whole solar energy value chain. And that was, of course, was supposed to benefit the United States producers, workers, consumers. So you have some solar companies that initially pushed for the U.S. government for tariffs. Well, you know, they've either gone bankrupt or have been acquired, Dave.
Ah, the American way, it seems, Melody. In his Davos speech yesterday, the World Economic Forum president said that the U.S. is on the threshold of virtually unlimited reserves of energy, including from traditional fuels, liquid natural gas, clean coal, next generation nuclear power, and gas hydrate technologies. Much of Trump's remarks were focused on his economic policies and trade deals with China, Canada, and Mexico, saying they all should help boost the world's largest economy, us, later this year. He said, we have a tremendous upside potential. That's what he told the Davos audience. When all of the trade deals and the massive deregulation starts kicking in, which will be during this year, especially toward the end of the year, these agreements represent a new model of trade for the 21st century, he continued. Agreements that are fair, reciprocal, and that prioritize the needs of workers and families.
Well, I guess we're going to have a new little segment on the program that I guess we can call them trade shorts. You know, it's naturally it's about trade. And you had French Finance Minister Bruno Le Maire said he's hopeful for a compromise with the U.S. on digital tax to avoid a transatlantic trade war. Trump says the deal between ourselves and essentially Europe is something we all want to be able to make while repeating a threat to impose tariffs on imported cars. And I guess if that digital tax goes on, I heard too, Dave, that that's exactly what we'll do is we'll put the tariffs to compensate us on that because the U.S. does not want a digital tax. And the U.K.'s chancellor of the exchequer, Sajid Javid, said in Davos, said a deal with the European Union takes precedence over one with the U.S. Chinese Vice Premier Hong Shang says his country's trade deal with the U.S. won't hurt rival exporting nations. You know, as we you know, there's complaints that are beginning to mount from governments that were left out of this agreement. Economists still aren't convinced on that, and the Department of Justice said the White House can use executive privilege to decline to release a Commerce Department reporting advising Trump on these proposed tariffs on imports of automobiles and also the car parts.
Thank you. You know, just moving on to another area, but staying in Davos, really, the CEO of the too big to fail J.P. Morgan Chase, Jamie Dimon, said in an interview this morning in Switzerland that the only financial market bubble he sees right now, but one he's most concerned about, is government debt. Pretty big bubble, if you ask me, Melody.
Oh, he irritates me though. He's partners, and he sits there, and I don't know, he just irritates.
Oh yeah.
Me. But go ahead.
He's very self-serving. A politician are. When he needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at the World Economic Forum, in an interview with CNBC's Andrew Ross Sorkin. He asked Dimon if he sees any frothy areas in the market. And Dimon responded, only in sovereign debt. I think the only is a major misnomer there, but certainly mm-hmm. sovereign debt, if it's not the biggest concern, perhaps it ought to be.
Yeah, but as I mentioned, let me ask you this, Dave. Isn't everything connected to sovereign debt, though?
Well, you can certainly make that argument. It's a good point because so much follows from it. I mentioned last week the federal government released these eye-popping deficit numbers showing the federal budget deficit is on course to exceed $1 trillion this fiscal year 2020. Of course, the government ran a deficit of $357 billion in the first quarter of the new fiscal year that ended in December and is on track again to exceed this $1 trillion for the first time since 2012. Total U.S. public debt outstanding stands above $23 trillion, with debt held by the public a little north of $17 trillion. Sounds like a big problem to me, Mel. And of course, that doesn't include all the corporate and private individual consumer debt.
I saw a report. I'm going to try to find it during the break. It was about the Department of Defense. And, I mean, they're off budget by trillions and trillions of dollars. And I'll have to try to find that during the break. I mean, it was amazing. And I can't remember which new... I think it was a Bloomberg report. But I'll have to try and find it. But... yeah, I mean, and it's like these people get big bucks, and yet Dimon comes out and says, well, historically low interest rates around the world have kept markets calm amid rising levels of debt. Well, no kidding, Sherlock. He said that, you know, I mean, it's just like, really? I mean, this is what you get the big bucks for?
Captain Obvious.
He added that the negative interest rates as seen in Europe is further proof that investors could be overpricing government debt.
You think?
and yet, hey, right now people think central banks around the world can do whatever they want. They can't. Well, you know what? He better hopes that they do whatever they want because that's what keeps him in business. He says, but inflation would be a big negative surprise. Governments want inflation. They need inflation. I mean, that's where we're headed. He says if inflation unexpectedly shot higher, it would force central banks to hike interest rates to help cool down the economy. But that would also make government borrowing significantly more expensive. I think it's no. How about corporations?
Indeed it would.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How about corporations?
For the federal government, it would make. I think what did we read is either 5 or 6%. If that's what interest rates went to. It would make interest on the public debt the largest line item in the federal government's budget, even exceeding Social Security and the Department of Defense. And so it does have a dramatic impact.
He says that he thinks it's very hard for central banks to forever make up for bad policy. Well, yeah, well, they've had bad policy for... how many decades?
Mm.
But
mm. Well,
you know, the thing of it is, I just want to make a comment. This is what's happening. This is the crux of everything. This is why.
Sovereign debt.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how great the economy we're being told is. Wages aren't rising high enough for people to go out there and pay for the inflation that is creeping. We have inflation. It's more than their 2%. Dave.
Happy to be back. I'm sure it was difficult to not be able to get some stuff off your chest. You read this stuff and, you know, and you listen to these reports, and you know that your place is with your listeners in educating them in truth and honesty, and not, you know, to not be able to spread that word. That's got to be very frustrating. So I'm glad you're back and able to spread the truth.
Well, you know what? Just briefly, and I don't mean to go off. There was one cut. We were in Colombia, and the tour guy said to us, he said, the government wants us to believe that our inflation is 3%. But just between you and me, it's much, much higher, and everybody knows it. And I'm thinking, yeah, well, here in the States, they're told it's 2%, and everybody believes it.
Yeah, right.
He says government tells us that our unemployment is this number and it was low. He says, but it isn't. It is much, much higher than that. Same here.
Can you imagine the spillover from Colombia's neighbor to the north?
Hmm.
I haven't seen a recent figure, but yeah, certainly on its way to almost seven figures.
Hmm.
Well. Before we hit a break, it's a fun article here, I think. Germany took place in the 2020 Bloomberg Innovation Index, breaking Korea's, that's for the most innovative economy. South Korea was overtaken. They had a six-year winning streak, while the U.S. fell one notch to number nine. Now, this annual index, in its eighth year, analyzes dozens of criteria using a number of metrics, including research and development spending, manufacturing capability, and, of course, concentration of high-tech public companies. Well, if you're interested, here's the top 10. Number 10 is France. 9, as I mentioned, the U.S. 8, Denmark. Number 7, Finland. 6, Israel. 5, Sweden. Number 4, Switzerland. 3, Singapore. Number 2, again, South Korea. And finally, there at the top, Angela Merkel's Germany.
And we are right at the break. Perfect timing, Dave. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned. Just one more time.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Yesterday, we talked briefly a little bit about the LIBOR benchmark, and I know Dave mentioned it while I was gone. And, you know, we have this whole world, financial world, that is moving away from LIBOR and some other interbank lending benchmarks. And, I mean, in these benchmarks, I mean, they've been used for decades. Decades. And these benchmarks had been used to set the borrowing costs on bonds and loans, and even your credit cards. And who talks about derivatives anymore? But even them. And that's why I still believe when we had the LIBOR rate scandal, all of those loans should have been null and void, because they were creating rates that weren't real. I don't know if any rate is real anyway, but I mean, it's, and everybody knew it. Little Timmy Geithner. Oh, yeah, we knew. So, I mean, everybody was involved in this fraud. And when you think you have a contract that was created and signed based on fraud, you would just think that they would all have to have been rewritten null and void at that time. So, but no, that certainly with the trillions of dollars, that would upset the markets way, you know, I mean, that just wouldn't be done. So, but now they're doing that. They're taking away the LIBOR rate. Now, since 2018, more than $150 billion worth of bonds have been sold using rates that are set by these new benchmarks that was created. But it's, the market is still lagging way behind. And we mentioned yesterday that there's at least $12 trillion worth of deals, contracts, financial contracts, that need to be replaced or rewritten. And there really are no easy fixes. And yet this deadline, you have this deadline as early as this year. And so again, what the LIBOR was or is for now, it's just the daily average of what banks say they would have to pay to borrow from one another. And I still believe it. The rewriting of this has a lot to do, maybe not everything, with what is happening in the repo market overnight. There's got to be some sort of connection there. It only makes sense.
Yeah, that's I've wondered that too. It would be, I think, difficult to tie the two together, but it would certainly be interesting with people who look at this full time, people who don't work for the banks that look at this full time. It is curious, you know, since European and U.S. banks were found to have manipulated rates to benefit their own portfolios. LIBOR, a couple other benchmarks have been seen as tainted, rightly so. And along with other interbank-offered rates, such as the Euribor for the euro and TIBOR for the yen,
LIBOR is headed for history's scrap heap, set to be abolished by the end of next year, although, as Melody said, Bank of England Working Group has proposed halting new lending using LIBOR in the third quarter of 2020. Central banks around the world have been working to develop a replacement set of benchmarks based on what's called risk-free rates, RFRs for short. Goals to find a rate that reflects the general state of the credit market and is based on actual transactions. LIBOR, on the other hand, became open to manipulation as it went from being a blend of actual loans by a certain number of banks to a compilation of banks' guesses, ladies and gentlemen, about what such borrowing would cost. It's still amazing that there were so relatively few fines. I'm not sure anyone, I don't believe anyone, maybe one person went to jail over that, but there sure were a lot of not issuers, but, well, in a sense, issuers or third parties, municipalities, school districts, who were recipients of certain types of derivative products that were tied to LIBOR that really, the ones who, you got to believe, took it on the chin.
Yeah, I mean, and again, I mean, it's just guesses, and that's what these legal contracts, financial contracts. Well, I guess this whole world is just a big guess anyway. Who knows?
Yeah.
But we're gonna, you know, we've talked about.
We call them the way we see them, Melody, and if we don't see them, we make them up.
We've talked about the LIBOR for, you know, over the years because, you know, this was just one of my pet peeves. You know, it's just, and you would think that these contracts, I mean, mortgages and everything. We had Rob West on where, you know, he was, I'll have to check to see where he's at on his, he wrote a book on these LIBOR rates, how it affects your mortgages. It affects everything. And yet, by guesses, it's just truly amazing. So we're going to continue to talk about this because we're getting closer to, you know, these deadlines. And I do believe, personally, I do believe this has a lot to do with the repo markets. I think it has a lot to do with the Fed coming back in, purchasing bonds. I think it has a lot to do with the rates lowering. And I think it has to because, again, these loans, these rates are used for overnight lending. And that was one of the problems why the Fed started putting money into the repo market. It was because the rates were running up 9-10%.
Yeah, and uncertainty, this kind of uncertainty in particular, breeds higher risk. Of course, when there's higher risk in these kinds of markets, people are going to be looking for higher rates. And so one way to control these rates better, I presume, or find, you know, these banks finding a reputable alternative to the soon-to-be-defunct LIBOR.
Yeah. And when you have, what, $4 trillion a year in these overnight repo markets, you know, it's... So a lot of things are changing, and we'll get back to that. We'll talk about the various different areas that we'll see changes in any new news that comes along with the changeover in upcoming year. And again, does this mean anything? No. It could be a big swan. It could be a big black swan. It's just one of these things that show you that our financial system, this is not normal. This is not normal financing. I remember Bush, fuzzy math.
That's funny.
But we're going to go ahead and we're going to talk about how the dollar stretches and inflation. And now there was a report out by Brandeis University saying that nearly 10 million American kids live in low opportunity neighborhoods. They have limited access to good schools or parks or even healthy food. That should be number one. And these neighborhoods in which these children grow up really do shape many aspects of their adult lives. You know, how long they live, how healthy they're going to be, and even how much money they're going to make. And this new report from this university took in several factors, such as the poverty rate, employment statistic, acres of green space to assign opportunity scores, ranging from 1 to 100 to all 72,000 neighborhoods in the country. The hardest place to grow up is Bakersfield, California, where more than half of the residents under 18 live in low-opportunity neighborhoods. The best is Madison, Wisconsin.
Hmm.
Interesting.
Well, yeah, it sure is. Cities in the South generally have lower scores than those in the Northeast, for example. Cities with the greatest opportunity gaps are Detroit, Baltimore, and surprisingly, in my opinion, Philadelphia. In Detroit, there's a neighborhood with a score of 95. That's among the best in the country for kids, as well as one in the same city that scored a 2. A kid born in the better neighborhood will likely earn much more and live up to 7 years longer than another child born just a few miles away. It's amazing. Opportunities distributed far more equally in other cities, like New York, Los Angeles, and Dallas. There's also an extremely clear and disturbing racial divide. It's according to Dolores Acevedo Garcia, who's the lead researcher and director of Brandeis's Institute for Child, Youth, and Family Policy. Hmm. Anyway, that's an interesting story.
It really is. And we talk about what is being taught in the schools, but here you have infrastructure. How our infrastructure truly is decaying. And this is just another sign of a country, I think, that is not healthy.
And on the road to different levels of decay.
Mm-hmm. Yes. We talked about this during the break, Dave, about the coronavirus. I find this interesting because it just popped up out of nowhere. And I also found it interesting how, I mean, all through the years, every year we talk about the flu, we talk about this, we talk about, you know, the various things that are going on health-wise and so forth. And I do find it interesting that everybody got sick, like, you know, last week of Christmas into the second week of January. I mean, everybody, and all over the country. So I find this coronavirus interesting. And I mentioned it to Greg Hunter yesterday. And for those of you who didn't tune in yesterday, you can listen to that interview on the website, dgscoins.com, yesterday, January 21st, the interview with Greg Hunter. And he said, you know, just off the cuff that, you know, China's issue with Hong Kong, you could probably describe it a little bit better than I can, Dave, as far as a possible warfare.
Oh, the weaponization, yeah.
Weaponization.
Of the virus. Certainly plausible. There's certainly no evidence of that, but I believe Greg was talking about just how, you know, a number of stars could be in alignment for the Chinese to have taken what I think most of us would agree would be a fairly questionable, probably I think we would need to say immoral way of trying to control, let's say, the violence and nonviolent protesting in Hong Kong. A great way to get people off the streets, as you said, Melody. Staying in their houses or in schools or in the workplace, and staying out of contact with a lot of one another. And I think there's also, you know, an interesting case, let's hope it doesn't occur, but you know, it makes you wonder if, you know, other non-state players, ISIS, for example, you know, other terrorist outfits, you know, with ill intentions toward a good part of the rest of the world, would use this as an opportunity to spread widespread sickness across the globe, or at least parts of it. So we're not saying this to scare anybody, but it's both are plausible explanations. Although I believe it would probably be real difficult in the latter case, you know, for a terrorist group to you know, to spread this in a big way.
And so, yeah, and also, yeah, I'm going to say the two words, false flag. Who knows where it's coming from? But yeah, and but there has been a the first case of this is now in the States, and it went from 3 dying to 17 people dying. And again, when you can put all this into perspective too. How many people does China have?
Billion here, a billion there.
Yes, so 17 people out of a billion. It's very unfortunate for those 17 people, but it does kind of put it into a little bit perspective. And I don't know how many people are in this province, but there have been illnesses that have been confirmed in Thailand, Japan, and South Korea. And now we have one in Washington State, in Everett, and he was returning from a trip from where this to China Central City, Wuhan. We're out of time right now, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be back tomorrow. I want you to make sure that you stay healthy, listen to Wendy Wilson, take rest, eat healthy, and we'll be back tomorrow. So until then, be safe, good night, and God bless.
Bye-bye. If I got me a well-being